Good morning, everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of Mornings with the Outlaw. If you notice, I'm not jumping up and down and going crazy like I normally do, trying to get your spirits up into the show. And that's because, of course, we have to be respectful for what happened over the weekend. Very difficult weekend all over our country and in our streets, and it's still going on today. But we thought it would be good to do a show this morning, talk about some stuff to maybe take your mind off what's going on there. And of course, we'll address a little bit of it later on in the show. But I hope you are okay with watching us live. Hope it'll entertain you and put a smile on your face a little bit with some of the tough stuff that's going on out there in the world right now. So thank you all so much for joining us. And for those of you who may not are a little skeptical joining us, maybe think it's a little bit out of taste that we're doing a show, I want to make sure that you understand we're going to approach this very respectfully and just have fun conversations about these topics, and then of course get into what happened over the weekend. I am one of your hosts here, the Outlaw John Rocha. Thank you so much for joining us live here on the Outlaw Nation channel. I'm joined now, as always, by my special guest over there in St. Louis. Her name is Alex Shawshack, and she's amazing. How are you, Alex?
I am pretty darn spiffy. I know this is a very incredibly difficult time for everyone, yeah. You know, but like you said, I'm actually happy that I am out of bed emotionally as well as physically. And, I'm sure. You know, I'm happy to talk about something a little bit lighter hearted than a lot of other stuff going on, you know, help take the mind off things. And, you know, sometimes it's just good to have some normal conversations.
Yeah. Yeah.
How normal are these conversations? I mean, at the same time, we're talking about like air and
yeah, Kathy Yan and all this stuff going on for sure. That's for sure. Yeah. You know, but I do want to say thank you to everyone who subscribed over this. You know how the process is. Subscribed to the channel over the weekend. Ian Jensen, Stephen Moten, Alejandro Diaz, Marcus Taylor, Off We Go Now, Derek Ong, Levi Bowman, May Murray 33, Gary Singh, Felix T. Gerger Jr. All of you have brought us so close to 13,500 as we keep marching towards 15,000 and then eventually 20,000 followers as well, or subscribers rather. So I appreciate you all coming aboard. And the Streamlabs and the Super Chats are open. If there's things you want us to talk about, things you want us to address, things you want us to get into, please send those Streamlabs and Super Chats in. But also, if they have anything to do with the subjects we're talking about, that as well would be much appreciated. Mm-hmm. Real quickly, Ben Rainer already sent in a Streamlab. He said, "Hey, Rocha and Alex, happy Monday, both of you. Hope both of you are staying safe. Rocha, thank you for streaming today. Helps having a place to go to, not escape, but just to be a part of a community with people that share opinions and thoughts. Thanks again to both of you." Well, that's very kind of you, Ben. That's our point today. That's our process. I know other shows are maybe taking the day off or whatever, and absolutely respect that. But we felt we could go forward with this type of show that we do and maybe help you all take your mind off what's going on in the world for a little bit and have some fun discussing these subjects or exploring these subjects with us, which, as Alex mentioned, aren't the easiest subjects that we're going to get into. But we might as well jump into it now. And it's great to see all of you all in here. Please remember to swing that cursor button over and hit that like or the thumbs up symbol that you see there to give us some love on the show and the channel. You know, the more likes that you give us, the more we get seen by the algorithm and all that for the YouTube channel itself. All right, let's jump into our first subject. And our first subject, of course, is Kathy Yan. Yeah. She had herself quite a weekend this weekend. Kathy Yan did getting onto Twitter and having these exchanges with David Ayer. And then, of course, these exchanges with Grace Randolph as well. There's been the talk of the town so far. But she responded to something David Ayer had tweeted about the reshoots with Suicide Squad and about the tone of Suicide Squad being, you know, needing to have it be changed from being a little bit darker than it was to what it ended up becoming. And we'll get into that a little bit later as well. But responding to one of Ayer's tweets, Kathy Yan said, "I feel your pain," right here. David Ayer said this was a reshot, and they were talking about the Suicide Squad tone there. She said this. David Ayer said this was reshot because the tone was too dark. My first act was a normally constructed film. I took my inspiration from Nolan. There were real scenes with incredible acting between Jared and Margot. Joker was terrifying. Harley was complex. And then Kathy Yan chimed in and said, "I'm so sorry this happened to you, David. I know the pain," of course, which set all the tongues ablazing, including me. I retweeted this and said, this is a big deal, where Kathy Ann is chiming in saying, I feel your pain. Of course, some people defended her saying, we don't know what she's talking about. We don't know if she's talking about other movies that maybe she didn't really, but she has not done many, if any, you know, big time feature films, just smaller independent films. And she's a former journalist, but you hear this, and there were rumors about the Birds of Prey stuff, which we'll address in a few minutes here. But you hear this, Alex, she is chiming in, supporting David, who's saying that his stuff had to get a reshot or recut so it was a little more palatable or funny for what they were trying to do with Suicide Squad than his dark take on Suicide Squad. And you go, well, is this still happening where the WB execs are chiming in and changing things? Are they still too worried about things being too dark? What was your thoughts on this, Alex?
There was a lot to read, and so I'm just going to take another sip of coffee before diving into this.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I need more caffeine to get yourself picked up. To read all the 50 million tweets that was going into this.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So this was a really interesting article. I read this one. I read several other articles, getting other parts of you, because I was really curious about, because I don't know anything about Grace Rudolph that also.
Oh, Grace Randolph. Yeah.
Randolph. Thank you. Yeah. That was also involved. But yeah, so I do feel like for any major film, you know, there are going to be reshoots. There are going to be major edits. Mm-hmm, obviously, mm-hmm. The studios are going to be the ones financing it in theory. So of course, they're going to have some opinions when it comes to how they should really, you know, really refocus the film sometimes. And let's be honest, some of the best films of all time, it's a combination of not only the director's creative perspective, but also the studios as well.
Yeah.
You know, that's something you have to know and realize kind of going into a major movie like Birds of Prey or Suicide Squad. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're looking to be involved in the DCEU, wanting all the creative independence you need, it's not the right world for you.
True.
You know, but at the same time, you know, it is obviously it's very frustrating for any creative professional, especially when you're in that kind of director role, mm-hmm. where you're used to being in that kind of managerial role, making those final decisions, and someone telling you, no, you're wrong. Stop it. Change it.
Yeah.
And so I can't really imagine, you know, from her point of view, how, or David's point of view, how it must feel. Now, she kind of mentions that, I know how you feel. So like you said, we can take this in a lot of different directions. If you don't even know if it's referring to Birds of Prey mm-hmm. in particular. But, you know, like I mentioned, it really can be referring to a lot of different, you know, aspects of the movie as well.
Yeah, you mentioned Grace Randolph, and that's the next thing we jump into here in just a second. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, James Gunn had offered support to David Ayer. David Ayer, some people called out David Ayer on social media for his portrayal of Harley Quinn. He responded back and took, you know, he took their comments in stride and said, you're absolutely right. Here are the things that I did want to do, but here are things I did do that didn't quite 100% work. I understand your complaint. Totally respect that. So Kathy Yan came out of this, out of her Birds of Prey with people praising her version of Harley Quinn, and rightfully so. I thought Margot Robbie, I liked Margot Robbie more in Birds of Prey than I did in Suicide Squad. I thought she had more chance to spread her wings as an actress with that character and enjoyed her journey. Now, whether you like the movie or not, that's your own personal thing, but I liked what she did. So he responded back in kind, and this has been growing over the last few weeks here with David Ayer, bringing more and more attention to his thing. But then Kathy Ann and Grace Randolph had an exchange on Twitter, which is what Alex is referring to. Let's take a look at this real quick. I think I have all the tweets up here. First, it was this one. Kathy Ann said, Grace Randolph responding to Kathy Ann's tweet to David Ayer, where she said, I'm sorry this happened to you, David. I know the pain. Grace Randolph said, who is a noted YouTube blogger and critic. She's with the Critics Choice. You know, she's a part of that organization. She said, I told you guys, massive reshoots largely to take out quote unquote dick pics storyline and add more action via Chad Stahelski. I'm surprised Yan would jump on this bandwagon though. Hashtag Birds of Prey, very well reviewed by critics and has a very strong fan base that vehemently defends the film as is. Hashtag DCU. But then Kathy Yan responded. And by the way, once again, Kathy Yan is a former journalist who became a screenwriter and then a director. She said, excuse me, you have no idea what you're talking about. It's fascinating you would deem to try when you weren't part of the process whatsoever. Grace, not to be outdone on Twitter, responded back and she said, no reporter is ever part of the process. They're different jobs. Everything I reported is common knowledge with many insiders. I brought it to the public. I gave your film a good review. And I said here, you have a strong fan base. So logically, there should be no problem here. Now, Listen, let me tell you something. As someone who's a professional at throwing shade, when you see the thing at the end, so logically there should be no problem here. That's her jab at Kathy. Kathy responds back in a classy way. She says, "And I thank you for the support, but let's set the record straight. There were never dick pics. You peddling a pedophilia rumor is not journalism. Peddling any gossip is not journalism. I know. I was one." And then responding back to someone who said, "Well, on his question, if the pic was tasteful, why was he so hell-bent on getting it back?" Kathy Ann said, "It was a joke to show how narcissist he is. It didn't work. We all agreed, so we rewrote some ADR. That's it. Absolutely no reshoots were devoted to this nonsense issue." And then finally at the end, she said, "This is not true. There is talking about this idea of dick pics." She said, "This is not true. There's never been any discussion around the size of Roman's dick. I can't believe I even have to write that. The original script had called for an image of Roman as Michelangelo's David, you know, art. If that's a dick pic, then the Louvre is full of them. Meanwhile, articles like the below one are written off of your scoops, quote unquote. Congratulations on being the scum of journalism." And then tags Cosmic Book News article from Matt McGloin talking about essentially referencing what was going to be in the movie as some sort of pedophilia storyline. So a lot to dissect here, a lot to consume here. Alex, what was your reactions to this back and forth as you were looking at this?
On one hand, I'm like, Grace, what the F are you doing? You're just digging that hole deeper and deeper. You just kept going, didn't you? So logically, calm yourself down. But also, Kathy, you know, I'm very surprised she really fought back. It's not only as intensely as she did, but she kind of she didn't reaffirm her. Well, she did kind of reaffirm that, you know, there was some kind of not as dick pic storyline per se. But you know, there was this aspect of, you know, some kind of a character storyline where it was really kind of focused on his narcissism, his sociopathic tendencies, and him just being possibly obsessed with his penis or something along those lines.
Right. And the side of it. Yeah.
Exactly. So I understand where they were going for. And even because even though it is an R movie, like at the end of the day, it is still a DCEU movie. So maybe they filmed a handful of scenes and they were like, you know what? It's just not the vibe we were going for. Let's just go ahead and scrap it. It's just not what we were kind of hoping it would be. But also, like, once you make a villain go down the route of discussions of potential pedophilia or something like that, that really takes it to another level. That feels like it's edgy when if we're unnecessarily so. So I am actually, if anything, very glad that they scrapped whatever it was. But even if it was, I doubt it was along those lines.
Right.
But you know, if Grace was the first one that kind of mentioned there was this potential idea of him being some kind of pedophile or whatever it might be, but kind of rough. I'm not a big fan of her responding the way she did, but I mean, at the end of the day, she is the creative, you know, involved with it. So, I mean, if I was in her shoes, I would probably be pretty damn pissed as well.
Yeah, I think she's got a right to defend her film and her point of view and say, listen, you weren't part of the process. And yeah, reporters, I know, I've been around those scoops reporters. They love to get those scoops. And sometimes they're right. And actually, I would say a majority of the time, they are right with what they find out about a movie, but they don't necessarily find out about the process. They find out about the end result or find out about certain parts of the movie that are going to be in it, but not necessarily the process. So Kathy Yan is absolutely correct that Grace was not part of the process. Grace says, "I wasn't part of the process. You're right, but I have sources and they told me this or that," and sources that she trusts. And look, Grace has built her empire or what she has on those sources, and very people believe her sources. Yeah, exactly. A very popular critic on YouTube, and she does these videos about it. And to be fair, Grace never said anything about pedophilia. What Grace was saying and she showed was dick pics, right? That's what she was inferring. Yeah. And the idea of swallowing, and for those of you who haven't seen the movie, when Cassandra Cain swallows the diamond, the rumors or the story was supposed to be that the pictures in the diamond were essentially, and what Kathy Ann referred to, a statue of David. So it's probably Black Mask's character, Ewan McGregor's character, in a position like Statue of David, and you saw him. And so it was that inference. It was more of an artistic approach to it, not dick pics. Like, let's say some idiot would send you on Tinder or wherever you do your dating. Sadly for you ladies out there getting dick pics. That's not what she was referring to. She was referring to something a little more artsy, a little more sculpture wise. But people took that story and ran with it and inferred pedophilia because it's a young girl swallowing a diamond that has a picture. They might have a picture of Roman, the character that Ewan McGregor plays, in a position as a sculpture with his penis. And of course, the Statue of David has his penis out. So that's what they were kind of inferring. But they took that and ran with it. And so she may not be implying that Grace specifically said pedophilia, but implied that Grace's reporting inspired other people to take that and run with it and create that pedophilia storyline for clicks and for hits. And Lord knows, I've worked for a website. I know they're desperate for clicks and hits off certain comments and certain things that are meant to be salacious or opinion pieces and what have you. So I understand that. But at the same time, I got to respect Kathy Ann coming back here hard on Grace and going like, listen, this is my movie. You did this and you did this and I appreciate it. And she comes from a place of not being just a creative. She was a journalist herself. And so she was upset and rightfully so that things got misconstrued about something that she was playing with. And as an artist, you said earlier here, Alex, as an artist, everything's part of the process till you get to the end result. So you can explore multiple different storylines and then say, okay, it doesn't work, doesn't work, doesn't work. And in the end, she cut some things out and got, we got the film that we got. So I think she's in the right to defend her film. I understand Grace's position, but this is an interesting thing whenever creatives bash heads with journalists and reporters out there and YouTube personalities who are trying to build their brand or maintain their brand.
Absolutely. You know, it comes to Kathy again. I am sure she is being told by her agent, you know, that, hey, if anything, the more you talk, the more you're confirming. You're confirming a lot of stuff behind the scenes. And, you know, it's and obviously I don't think people would have really acknowledged Grace until you know, Kathy actually responded to her, which makes it a little frustrating to get. But yeah. I know from firsthand experience that, you know, it can be very difficult not to respond and be like, no, 100% false or whatever. But if you acknowledge it, you know, it does bring more attention to the whole situation. So, you know, it's very difficult on both ends because you really want to defend yourself and be like, no, you're completely false. This is what happened or whatever it may be. Yeah. So not to mention, I am kind of curious that there was this idea of, you know, it is, like you said, this whole dick pic storyline, this idea that, you know, obviously he's, that, you know, he's obviously not only narcissistic, but incredibly sociopathic. He peeled up. He likes to watch people's faces peeled up. He's that guy. But, you know, it's also a movie that, you know, really is really focused on the idea of sexuality, where sex is being used as a form of power in this movie. Obviously, you know, the way Roman was able to, he had that girl get up on the thing, you know, and he told her to get dressed. Yeah. It's the way he did, you know, it's symbolic of rape and assault, obviously. And so they were probably like, you know, we've already did this. We already hate him. Right. We already know what's going to happen at the end.
Right.
So probably no purpose in really making him even worse. You know, I mean, not so much worse, but even having another storyline where we are just reaffirming that we don't like him.
Well, and so. you gotta go way far out there to think if there was a statue of Roman or AKA Black Mask in the position of David and it got out there, you know, because of course there's a little subplot between him and Victor Zsasz that feels like maybe there's a kind of a subtle gay storyline aspect of it, I think, between Zsasz's feelings for Roman. I don't know if Roman necessarily indulges in them. I saw the movie, you know, twice a while ago, so I don't remember correctly 100% if he indulges in it or not. But I know Victor Zsasz kind of defends him and kind of like has a little, you can tell he has affection for Roman. So what's up?
Well, I never thought of it as affection. Okay. I always read it as Zsasz was the, whereas Roman, he's like obviously incredibly evil and demented and everything. But at the same time, he's almost like a child. He never really emotionally developed, and that's why he throws these temper tantrums essentially. Right. And Zaz is the one that's kind of there as like the babysitter, where he's kind of monitoring them, but he's like, yeah, do it. What? She offended you. What? She was talking about behind your back. He's that person really instigating everything. But at the same time, I never got the idea of like they're in any kind of sexual relationship. Yeah. But if they were, it felt like he wanted some sense of control because he knows what kind of influence he has. And so by being able to control Roman, he's able to control the city by extension of what's going on. But he's also a sociopath and narcissist. You know,
but so
they're like messing with feelings.
It would just make sense though. I mean, if he wanted to get these pictures back, right? But you have to go pretty far out there to think, because she swallowed a diamond that she had no idea had these pictures of Roman, and then somehow it's a pedophilia storyline. I think that's where I start to go, this is just for clicks. This is just to get attention. This is just to get hits on your site. And it frustrates the shit out of me when I see stuff like this, because this is what divides creatives from journalists. This is what divides creatives sometimes between them and websites that are trying to report kind of talk about these things and explore these things. You got to do it responsibly. You're flying off the handle to try to get attention, try to get clicks. I think this is where the danger comes, and this is where creatives get really upset, and you create the toxicity that you then go about on your websites and complain about in the fandom. But if you're contributing to the toxicity, then you're part of the problem. You know, this is the frustrating part I feel about Snyder Cut. Like, I know there are some fans that went a little too overboard with the Snyder Cut, and some people have gotten some pretty strong responses from those fans, and I totally understand that. But that's a minority of those Snyder Cut fans. But by the same token, I think there are some journalists and some website personalities who don't mind jabbing at the Snyder Cut fans for a reaction, and they come off as arrogant, condescending, self-congratulatory with themselves, and it's frustrating to watch. So that contributes to the toxicity as well. So if both sides are doing it, and both sides are doing it, and it's a minority on both sides of people doing it, but that minority is the one that's causing the toxicity. And that's the frustrating part of this whole situation. And I think Grace had every right to push back and say, hey, look, I'm a reporter. This is what I got. But Kathy Yan has every right to defend it, and probably was sick of hearing about these terrible storylines thrown out there about her movie that were not correct, and felt the need to finally address it with someone who is known in the community and in the punditry world, by a lot of people. So she has a strong footprint. So going back and forth with her is her way of maybe finally addressing this thing and putting it to bed, hopefully.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything you said. I mean, I have some friends that have, I don't want to say they've been attacked, but they've definitely been.
Yeah.
Talked to thoroughly on the socials, rather aggressively about their ideas regarding Snyder Cut, Air Cut, etc. And it is really, really frustrating. It's ridiculous. If I say, I'm not a huge fan. I'm not super excited about For the Air Cut, but I understand that movie's, Suicide Squad is not for me. And I understand that.
Right.
So I'm just like, I think it's cool. Would I watch it? Sure. But do I need it? No. But I understand that. Now Grace in particular, this is not her first bout.
Oh no.
So to speak, when it comes to, not only just, talking to directors and everything, like I said, she's with the Critics' Choice. She does have she's very involved on YouTube and a bunch of things, in the community. And she has quite a bit of sources, behind the scenes when it comes to a lot of these studios. So, when she is saying something, she definitely, like she said, she's like, I do have sources that are saying these things.
Yeah.
And so I do respect that she is sticking to her guns. Mm-hmm. But same time, I also respect Kathy sticking to her guns. They just have different opposing views on it. Yeah. Grace has a history of butting heads with people within the community. And it's not going to be the last time either. Right. So I'm really kind of curious how she's going to come back.
I don't falter for that. I don't judge. I mean, Snyder does the same things. Jeff Snyder's a friend of mine. If I'm okay with Jeff doing the things that he does sometimes, kind of goad or you know, put stuff out there to kind of risk the wrath of the studios or creatives, I certainly can't have a problem with Grace doing it. So she's got her base that she appeals to. And look, she defends the DCEU. She's a very strong defender of the DCEU.
Huge.
Huge. And she tries to be, you know, because one of her videos, the reason she says that, like, she thinks some of these pundits and critics don't want these films to come out is because they don't like the DCEU at all. And some of them, and she says by the same token, some of them want these things to come out so they can just tear them to pieces without actually caring about watching them again or reevaluating them again. So that's her point of view on some of these DCEU movies. So she's a strong defender of that particular side of things. And, you know, that plays into our next story. You mentioned David Ayer. We should jump into it now. We'll see what happens more with Kathy Ann in this situation. But I agree with Alex. The better agent is like, what are you doing?
What's calm down.
Get off the Twitter.
Get off the Twitter. What are you doing? I want to get you more movies after this.
Exactly.
Calm down.
But there is.
Studios going to trust you.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going off like that. There's more here with David Ayer and the Suicide Squad. That's our next topic here as we jump into it. And that is David Ayer has been lamenting that following major reshoots and edits before its 2016 release of Suicide Squad, he said, my soulful drama, quote unquote, was beaten into a comedy. He responded to the hashtag release the air cut, which demanded that Warner Brothers give Suicide Squad the same treatment it is now giving to Justice League and release a version of the film as the director had intended. And he had some tweets that he released as well here in this situation. He said, imagine if Todd Phillips' film The Joker was reshot, recut because it was too dark. This is exactly what happened to Suicide Squad. Anyone who says my cut did not work owes me to say it directly to me. That's a strong statement, essentially implying that no one told him from the studio, I think, or executive side of these things, that it did, that his cut did not work. You know, he says, anyone who says my cut did not work owes me to say it directly to me. That's a really strong statement there. And then he responded again and said to a fan that said, the I Started a Joke trailer is the greatest isolated piece of Suicide Squad content. David Ayer responded, this trailer nailed the tone and intention of the film I made. Methodical, layered, complex, beautiful, and sad. After the BVS review shell-shocked the leadership at the time and the success of Deadpool, my soulful drama was beaten into a comedy, which is a quote I referenced just a minute ago. And then further he went, responding to Grace Randolph, who we just spoke about. And she said, I definitely want to see that as well after. Grace, I don't mind if my cut is, David Ayer responded, Grace, I don't mind if my cut is seen in 5 years. I simply want the best version of my work represented. Zach deserves this wonderful, wonderful opportunity he's been given by HBO Max and AT&T. How smart of him to tag both of them. It's all love. And Grace, of course, was essentially responding to a fan who said they wanted to see the Enchantress storyline fleshed out, the earlier intention of David Ayer for the Enchantress storyline, which was a lot more, I don't know, it's just bigger, a larger part of the film itself, and it was connected to Darkseid and Steppenwolf, so there was more involved there for the Enchantress storyline. It wasn't just her brother. So this has been building, as we said, building up steam, building up steam. David Ayer keeps dropping these. This is exactly what Zack Snyder did, but in, you know, in the more spread out doses. David Ayer is dropping this thing right now, and now people are battling online whether we should see the cut, the David Ayer cut, if they're even going to do it, after the Justice League cut or before Zack Snyder's Justice League cut. I don't care either way, to be honest with you, because I think we're going to be able to move timelines around in our heads wherever we watch it. But now this is ramping up. Do you think, just like Zack Snyder, do you think there's something going on behind the scenes that no one is talking about, that maybe David Ayer is negotiating with HBO Max, with Warner Brothers, with AT&T to get his cut put out there by the streaming service?
Considering the amount of activity that has happened only in the past week, I feel like every time we've chat, you know, because we chat every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, this time, just saying.
Yes, we did. Ding, ding, ding.
Hang out with us. Hey. But, so honestly, I feel like for the past week and a half or so, I mean, since I started, I feel like there has been at least one story, you know, that's been released where he's reaffirming, you know, I wasn't done justice. My right. cut wasn't released. I did yeah. so much film. It would be so easy to edit, you know.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things. He's been very vocally. I mean, he's transitioned from, you know what, I would be good with having it, having a air cut done, mm-hmm. but I don't need it. But now he's like,
whenever it comes out is fine. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Whenever it comes out is fine. It's all love. I love WB. Sorry. Yeah. WB. Now he's like, give it to me. I want it really bad. Give me
yeah.
my movie, HBO. That's what it feels like right now. He's definitely, I don't want to say he's getting much more greedy, but he's definitely getting much more like consistent and vocal yeah. about how he feels about, you know, being this, like, just like at the end, you know, I mean, like mm-hmm. you said, you know, having studio come in and make edits to a movie that you are just so directly involved in, no pun intended, you know, it can be incredibly frustrating. Now, I'm really kind of conflicted
okay.
because, you know, he really kind of he says that Suicide Squad is like focuses is complex, it's dramatic and everything. And yeah. I went back and watched that trailer the joke trailer.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is a pretty great, you know, trailer. I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also read a handful of my old, you know, Suicide comics. And I'm like, if anything, there is a really funny aspect to, I mean, it's meant to be comedy. It's meant to be sometimes a black comedy.
Yeah.
And there's sure there's are elements of drama here and there because if someone dies or those relationships being had. But at the same time, I would never, I've never seen read an animated Sorry, I've never seen an animated Suicide Squad animated film mm-hmm. or read a Suicide Squad comic or that's like so that's under that description he gave. So this yeah. feels a little conflicting because I don't want that. I don't yeah. want something super dark and dramatic that's inspired by Nolan. Like, that's not what Suicide Squad is about. So on one hand, I am kind of curious about it because, you know, I mean, it's yeah. a new version of Suicide Squad I haven't seen before. But at the same time, I just know I don't usually don't like his movies. So I'm like, ugh.
I know you said that before and many times on the show, and I respect that point of view.
Yeah.
But I personally would like to see it because I'd like yeah. to see what he intended. And I do yeah. like Ayer's movie. So, you know, like I said, I totally respect your opinion mm-hmm. and other people who feel like he doesn't yeah. flesh out the female characters as strongly as he does the male characters. And I totally mm-hmm. see that. But I'd like to see his version of this and True. See if there's more with mm-hmm. Harley, like he said he intended. But the thing is there a cut that doesn't need to do reshoots? Is there a cut that doesn't need to do VFX or voiceover or narrative? Because, I mean, if you're saying that Darkseid was originally your villain or Steppenwolf was originally more part of the film and there was no brother or anything, if there's really the Enchantress's brother, rather, if there really is this cut that exists and all you have to do is just kind of like edit it together, then I think that's a yeah. way easier process than 100%. What... Yeah, right. Then what Zack Snyder needs to do here with his version of Justice League. So I'm all down for releasing the air cut. I'm always down yeah. for releasing people's original cuts of the movie. I don't yeah. think anything gets lost. People, you know, studios worry about it. Or people get upset about it. I know. And I totally respect. I keep forgetting the gentleman's name. We met a couple times. He's really upset that, you know, Darkseid was not going to be done through Ava DuVernay. It was going to be done now through Zack Snyder. And so I totally respect that kind of anger. But overall, in my opinion, I think this is something that I like to see. I like create. I want to see the original intention for Rogue One. I want to see that original cut. I want to see the original Lord and Miller solo cut, if there even is mm-hmm. one to be made. I would have gladly contributed to seeing something like that. You know, so there's throughout history there have been some cuts that people, you know, like you said, Alex, there have been some cuts that worked out where the studio mm-hmm. gets invented, but there's also cuts that didn't work out where the studio intervened, and you can sense that when you watch it on your screen. So I'd like to see yeah. David Ayer, and this to me feels so much like Zach. This whole dropping these things, you know, I won't be surprised if he ends up on, Vero or whatever, doing his own version of watch-alongs with Suicide Squad and talking about the changes he would make. So we'll see. I like this idea, though, that David Ayer is kind of pushing the ball down the field mm-hmm. and kind of putting it in WB's court and in HBO Max's court. And maybe there are people who are more conducive to this. And remember this, what David is talking about is the old regime. The old regime at WB had issues with what he was doing, made these changes, a bit clumsy overall because the film was terribly received by most people who watched it. Not financially made some money, but it was terribly received by most people who watched it. So mm-hmm. he knows there's a better cut out there. So if this regime is cool with the Snyder cut, maybe they'll be cool with the Ayer cut. The danger now, Alex, is how many directors are going to come out of the woodwork now and start going like, well, where's I want to change my cut from the WB side of thing with DCU. Like, where is that going to, you know, kind of come into play here? Does Kathy Ann start saying, I want my original Birds of Prey cut to come out? That's certainly possible. So we'll see what happens here with this David Ayer cut. But I feel like we're marching closer and closer to us seeing it at some point.
At what point, I am kind of curious. I don't want to bring it back to Blade Runner, but I am kind of based about Blade Runner. There's like 10 different cuts of it. There's out
five
there.
Cuts, yeah.
Five cuts. Oh, sorry. Only five. Only so five. Few. So few cuts of it. But at the same time, I'm kind of curious. At what point is it going to end? I mean, I would love, I would love to see that as a potential double feature or something. On one hand, it's the more of the comedic cut, the studio cut that we've seen, so we can watch and be like, okay, this definitely doesn't work, or maybe it surprises you and surprised at how much you enjoy it because it did make quite a bit of money. Yeah. You can't argue that it wasn't technically a very successful film, but also at the same time, I would love to see another interpretation of the story, because at the end of the day, I know it's not for me, but at the same time, it's another superhero movie I would love to go see, and I'm all excited for it. And these are a lot of characters I really enjoy.
Yeah, agreed. Well, you know, we live on your super chats. We live on your Streamlabs. So I'm going to take a look at some of these right now. Please don't be shy about sending some stuff in for the Outlaw Nation channel for more, showing your support for Mornings with the Outlaw for me and Alex. Please send stuff in as you can and as you feel the need to do so. Let's jump into a couple of them right now. Hill Nellums, good to see you again, man. He said, from what I remember, weren't the reshoots of Suicide Squad forced based on the success and tone of the Deadpool movie? Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's what David Ayer is addressing here, that the old regime did not like what he had done originally. They saw how successful Deadpool was, and so they thought they could twist and switch and move and take this film and somehow turn a deeper, grittier drama, complex drama, into a comedy. And remember, they went from I started a joke, that slow thing, to Bohemian Rhapsody. So clearly that was their intention in changing
that it. That was also a good trailer, though.
Did you like that trailer? Okay.
I love that trailer. That song was I love the way they did it. The action incorporated it. I was listening to that trailer in the shower, I was like, this slaps. Okay. It's really great. But they're both great for different reasons.
Yeah. Right. No, that's fair. Okay. Totally understand that. But that's what was going on there, Hill. It certainly that was, you're correct on that. That was the reason why they did the mm-hmm. reshoot. They saw how Deadpool does it. Oh, we can do that with this character. Stephen Foley sent in a super chat. Let me see if I can find that real quick on our thing. Yeah, here it goes. He said, hey, John, you and I don't see eye to eye politically, but what we're seeing now is totalitarian. Regulating speech has to be a non-starter. Well, it depends on what you mean by regulating speech. I think anything that's signed into law that's telling people they can't tweet what they want or say what they want, I think is totalitarian. Now, by the same token, I think clarifying certain tweets to present as misinformation or incorrectly stated or this is a lie or this is a complete and utter fabrication, I think there's nothing wrong with that, because that is also freedom of speech. And if you're on someone else's someone else's site like Twitter, someone else's thing that they've set up, then you're kind of subject to their rules. They don't have to. It's a business, and a business refuses the right to not serve anybody or to not promote anybody. So when you're on someone else's server, you can't really well demand what they do with their server. That's like me walking into your house and telling you to rearrange your entire house because I don't like the way it looks. And that's not right. That's not how things work. But I hear you. I agree with you. I don't think regulating speech is a good thing. I do think, though, clarifying speech is an essential thing. Larry Lees jumped in. He said, good morning, Roka and Alex. Sadly, my work got vandalized. Go Rams. I don't know what this means. I don't know what this means.
His workplace.
Did it?
That's how I read it. If that's the case, Larry, I'm so sorry. That's awful. I hope everyone involved is, is okay and, and safe. Yeah. I can't imagine being in that situation for sure. My heart goes out to you.
Yeah, definitely, Larry. To any of you who are affected by this, by what happened over the weekend, look, I think there were definitely a lot of peaceful protests, and I can speak for Alex. We support the peaceful protests. You've got a right; that's your right in this country to protest peacefully. I think what happened afterwards, what was instigated, and of course, you were hearing from both sides who instigated what in these situations. I think for me, my anger stems from watching these looters going into stores who have no interest or care for the cause that initiated this, which was Black Lives Matter and the George Floyd murder, and it's my opinion, it's murder that happened in that situation. There is no, they don't care. They're out there trying to steal Adidas shoes and clothes out of Hot Topic and places like that. I think those people have no sympathy. They get no sympathy from me, Alex. I don't know if you feel differently, but they get no sympathy from me. And if police were to smack those people in the walls and arrest them immediately, I would have no problem with it, because those people are stealing from businesses that are trying to survive in the middle of a pandemic where they're already struggling to pay bills. We see so many sites, so many stores closing because they can't afford to, you know, lose this much business 3 months in a row. And you're going to run in there and take the ones that could stay alive. You're going to run in there and take the last of their stock or take the last of their stuff. And don't give me this crap. They're insured. They're not insured for the level of looting that you're doing in those stores. So if you're a looter or a person who was looting this weekend, basically screw you. That's my personal opinion. I don't know. Alex, what do you think?
I don't want to cry on camera. So fair. Pass.
Okay. Fair. Fair, Alex. I respect that.
Yeah. But I mean, I definitely understand where you're coming from. You know, and it's difficult for everyone, and, you know, everyone's under very stressed situations, and, you know, everyone's there's already a huge shortage of supplies and everything. And, you know, some people are looking at this as opportunity to get, you know, some supplies, some more necessary than others. Yeah. So, but yeah, a lot of these businesses that are very small businesses or that are trying to make, like mom and pop shops, restaurants, you know, black owned businesses that are trying, and, you know, just people of color that own these businesses and run it consistently. And it's very, very difficult to kind of see at the same time, but also at the same time, I personally feel very conflicted because I am, even though I am Asian American, you know, obviously I am Thai, but at the same time, obviously, I'm not going to compare my life situation to, you know, someone that is African American, someone that is black, and, you know, what they're going through. So, you know, because I don't feel comfortable personally. Obviously, I know you are Latino. You have a very different perspective, very different upbringing, obviously. Mm. And, you know, I personally, given my situation, I'm not comfortable telling someone, someone of color, how they should feel or how they should react in this situation as well. So at the same time, you need to do whatever you needed to know, do in order to, I don't want to say feel comfortable, but at the same time, find a way to feel safe in these very difficult times.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing. Trying to be safe, stay safe. You know, that's really the number one thing. Yeah. Larry Lee chimed in more. He said, "Yep, luckily we were still closed till movies are released." So certainly it was a movie theater. I think that Larry was referring to that was vandalized, and so you know, unfortunately, whatever was taken out of there, that's a sad situation there, Larry, because movies are where people are going to run to when all this stuff is done to, like, you know, kind of decompress from all the stress over the last few months and everything that's happened. And certainly this is yet another thing to add on top of to what's happening. You know, 2020 has been it's been a mother, that's for sure. It's been a mother, 2020.
I think it's kind of funny though, when times are very tough and difficult overall, what do we do as a culture? We turn to the arts.
That's true. Very true.
We turn to movie theaters. We turn to people that can help us escape and get away. So I'm a little sad, especially being at the movie theater. Yeah. You know, we are going to come back from this.
Absolutely.
We are nothing if not resilient as a people.
That's true. It's a good point. Phosphor King with one last super chat here. Hilarious seeing Alex do the Enchantress dance. There you go.
that's why I danced at prom. Like, hey, boys, don't I look sexy?
Did you go by yourself to prom, or you went with a date, right? You didn't go by yourself.
No,
right?
I totally went by myself. I didn't have anyone to ask me. Are you kidding me? I was in high school. I was trying to be emo, but I didn't know how to be emo because I wasn't cool.
Gotcha.
I didn't know what it really meant. I was part of the library club.
Okay.
That's how nerdy I was.
Were you like Daria's best friend? Were you like that kind of
I did AP art when I was in when I was in high school, my senior year. But I haven't picked up a paintbrush or a sketchbook since because it so emotionally drained me. So whenever I see an artist actively working artists, I am in such awe of people that do that. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just like, how do you do it? The energy, physically speaking, it's so physically involved, but also emotionally.
Yeah,
it takes a lot out of you.
We have one last stream lab for right now. John Doe said, with Justice League and Suicide Squad getting darker, do you think DCEU will make Flashpoint, considering in the comics, Aquaman and Wonder Woman are at war with each other? John, yeah. I'll go you one better. Wonder Woman decapitates people, for God's sakes. So it isn't just them being at war with each other. Wonder Woman is taking heads, literally, in Flashpoint. So I think you'd have to build it to Flashpoint, but I don't know if WB will ever do Flashpoint the way we want to see Flashpoint. You know, Marvel did Civil War, their version of Civil War, the MCU did, not the Civil War that we necessarily saw in the comics. There were a lot of things that were left out of their version of Civil War, but they made it work for their MCU universe. So the DCU could do their version of that storyline and do, you know, like kind of make it malleable, change some things around to make it work with what they created. But you have to go a long way before you can do Flashpoint to me. Cause I mean, we've got a new Batman that's coming. Well, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with the Flash, with Ezra and his participation in it. We don't know what's going to happen with a lot of these characters. Certainly Wonder Woman is set, Aquaman is set, but we don't know anything else that's coming down the road. So Flashpoint would be nice. I just think too much is in disarray right now until for them to even think about doing Flashpoint, and maybe some point down the road, it's possible, but not right now. What do you think, Alex?
I would be ecstatic to see it happen, to be completely honest. I think it would be a lot of fun. And sure, you are totally right when it comes to, we are definitely switching tones. We are kind of going back to this potentially darker, slightly darker tone, not too dark, slightly darker tone. Yeah. But at the same time, I don't know if I would want to see it. I just like, oh my gosh, Flashpoint is such a difficult... It's such a difficult one. The comic was so difficult to read. I like ruined my copy of it because I like was like weeping into my comic book. And my husband Lucas was just like, you're ruining the comic book. We have to throw it away now. We have to get a new one. And I was like, what? I'm sorry. It's like crying when Dobby died.
Spoilers. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Spoilers. I'm actually very content with the animated movie that they made. I love it. And you're right. I mean, like, there is like an affair between Aquaman and Wonder Woman,
and she
decapitates what's her name? Alanis? No, what's a
Mara.
Mara, thank you. I don't know why I thought it was Atlantis, her name. But at the same time, there's a lot of, there's strings of affairs. It's a soap opera. It really, there's affairs, there's murders, there's war. But also, I don't know if DCU would be super excited to see this this really cruel, really intense version of not only Wonder Woman, but also of Aquaman, where they don't maintain a lot of the, you know, characteristics that we've kind of grown to associate with them, that we, like, as the US, we love those characters, these new adaptations of those characters. And I don't know how much we would want to change it.
Well, and that's the thing. Right? I think if they had doubled down on the Zack Snyder approach to things, then Flashpoint would absolutely be in play. In fact, in BBS, you have that shot of Flash coming back in time to tell Bruce, you know, she's the key, that Lois Lane is the key, I think is what he's trying to say. So certainly Zack had dropped the seed of the possibility of Flashpoint down the road, because Zack Snyder likes the more realistic, grittier, darker tones of some of the WB stuff. Look, Dark Knight Returns is not a kumbaya graphic novel, for God's sake. So people who complain about the darkness in the WB films or the DC films drive me insane, because some of the best storylines have to do with that kind of stuff, the darker aspects of these characters. That's one of the great appeals, I think, in my opinion, of the DC characters. They have they can be played for kids, but there's a lot of realism to it that is that can be mined as well for some very human, you know, a human tragedy and human success. So all of that is mixed mm-hmm. in to the DC characters and their storylines that I think is fun to explore on screen. But, you know, some people just didn't like it. So what can
yeah.
you say?
I would love to see it adapted. I don't watch anything on the Arrowverse or anything on, but I would be curious if that was actually on there. I would be really curious to see it. I think Rick Amora said Arrowverse did a good Flashpoint story. So I don't really care about the show all that much, but I'd be kind of curious to see that on TV. So, hey, what season, what episode? So.
Let her know.
On Twitter, let me know.
Stephen Foley said right here, he's got another super chat. He said, hey, John, after all this, it's amazing that we can come together and talk movies/pop culture. And to add to that, I just got my copy of Saga Omnibus. Oh, that's good. That's like the first 18 issues, I think, of Saga. It's the story of Hazel, a child born to star-crossed parents from opposite mm-hmm. sides of a never-ending galactic war. And it goes from there to a lot of different places. I know that Koi Jandrew was a massive fan of Saga, so good to see you, or Saga, however you want to say it. Shout out to you, Stephen, for getting that. And yeah, lose yourself in something like that, man. Look, there's realism. There's a lot of real tough stuff going on in the world, but there's nothing wrong with taking a break for yourself and reading something that makes you feel good again, reminds you of the possibilities of our world. Not only what we can be as a people, but we can create as a people. And Saga, however you want to say it, is certainly an example of an incredible creation. Have you read those comics at all, Alex?
They sound familiar, so maybe they've been on a list of mine, but I don't think so, to be honest. There's so many books. There's so many comics.
There really are. You're right about that.
I used to have an entire room in my house dedicated to comics, and it's a lot.
Certainly, my mother's attic is absolutely dedicated to comics. So I hear you. Absolutely.
Very intimidating.
That's true. John does as well. Spoilers, John. That's why I said it like that. No, I appreciate that, John, but I assume that most of the people who are watching or listening to us have read Flashpoint, for God's sakes. I think all of us in the DCU mm-hmm. or DC or know about the DC and stuff have kept up to date on that. But I respect that, John. I respect that. Let's see here. Philosopher King, have you all seen the animated DC film Apocalypse War? Not yet, but it got the seal of approval from Kalinowski, so that means I'm going to watch it very, very soon. What about mm-hmm. you, Alex? Have you heard about this one, or have you seen this one?
No, I have not. I've not made use of my DC app as much as I've wanted to. I've really just been focusing on rewatching a handful of the animated series, Batman the Animated Series. And hey, is Batman Beyond actually on DC
app? I don't know. I haven't checked if they are. Let's see. I mean,
I'm curious. Someone let me know. Is Batman Beyond on that app? Because it just occurred to me that that could be on it, and that would be the best thing I've ever seen. But yeah, so when it comes to Apocalypse War, I have not seen it, but I have seen quite a few of the DC animated movies.
Yeah.
I can't remember a lot of the titles, to be honest. A lot of them are going on in the background, but I've seen a lot of them. So maybe I have, and I just don't remember.
Well, Batman Beyond is not on HBO Max, but it is on DC Universe. So if you have DC Universe, you can watch Batman Beyond, but not if you have HBO Max at this point, at least. At this point. Let's see. We got one more Streamlabs, and we'll jump into it. Andrew G said, wondering what graphic novel or series would you love to see done as a miniseries or film? I'd love to see some of Rick Remender's Black Science and wish they could bring his Deadly Class series back. I really love that one. What about you, Alex? Do you have anything you would want to see?
Okay, so are we sticking to the DCEU or are we talking about comic?
Whatever you want. Yeah, whatever.
Okay, there's this little comic book series called Fables. And it's a mixture of fairy tales in the real world. So you see like Snow White. She's just trying to figure out ways to pay her rent, kind of things. But it's a really great story. There's a lot of really dark themes. But at the same time, there's a lot of it's very vibrant, very beautiful. I would love to see that. Go check it out. It's really great. If you're not sure about comics and in the whole idea of you know, MCU, DC, or whatever it might be too overwhelming or anything along those lines that you're not sure where to start, I would just honestly just try.
You didn't hear that. You didn't hear that at all.
Hear what?
Yeah, exactly. Keep going.
Exactly. I would love to see Fables. Like I said, that's a really wonderful introduction into comics if you're not familiar. I would also love to see a mini series of The Long Halloween.
Oh, yeah. Long Halloween would be great.
I heard that's supposed to be they're supposed to be doing a lot of different things are being taken from The Long Halloween and being put into the Matt Reeves Batman. Yeah. I don't know how true that is, but yo.
I've said this a million times, and I just spilled a bunch of stuff in because of it. Identity Crisis is the number one thing I'd like to see. You talk about a dark story that you can explore in the DCU. This is an incredible one where a member of the DC family is killed, and they essentially turn it into a detective mystery trying to figure out who it was. And when you find out who it was, it is an insane revelation that will break your heart as well. And the other one is
this. The art is beautiful as well.
Yes, absolutely. Let me see. I want to give credit here to Brad Meltzer, Rags Morales, and Mike Baer. That's for Michael Turner doing the cover there. But this is the other one, and that is Green Lantern Rebirth. If I'm so, maybe I should hold it like that. Green Lantern Rebirth. There you go, from Jeff Johns and Ethan Van Sciver. I got this as a birthday present for one of my fellow geek buddies, Michael Vogel. And so those two are my top stories. I'd love to see them do them as an animated series or film and see what they can do. But I really doubt they'd do Identity Crisis. Yeah. It is pretty dark. But they did do a Flashpoint animated film. So maybe at some point they'll take a chance and do Identity Crisis as an animated film. I wouldn't be
surprised. It is a very popular, from what I remember, it is a very popular, storyline for sure.
Yeah.
Before I forget, Gotham City Sirens. Make that.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Gotham City Sirens is a very, very nice choice, actually.
That one, if you like Harlequin, even if you like a smidgen of, it's like a darker, weirder version of Birds of Prey, I guess. With, I don't want to say more murder, but at the same time, less play, where people are actively trying to resolve some issues. So, yeah.
Okay. I respect that. One last super chat before we jump into this. Stephen Foley says, "Hey, Alex, are you a fan of The Last Airbender?"
Am I a fan? Yes, I am a fan. I'm also an airbender. I'm an airbender.
Oh, you are?
According to all the quizzes I've taken, I am an airbender. I don't know how true that is. According to the internet, I'm an airbender. But yeah, I love that show. I heard Netflix is actually going to be trying to do another live action Last Airbender film.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that is. Or maybe that's just whispers, the stuff I want to hear. I don't know. But I would be very excited to see that happen, especially after the. I'm not going to acknowledge the live action movie.
Never mind. Let's not speak about it. I agree. Yeah. I agree. And Zeno Hour chiming in with Kingdom Come animated movie would be amazing. I agree with that as well. If you get the right animators for it, I think Kingdom Come would be incredible. It's tough to transfer Alex Ross's work. It's very, very tough because he's such a unique artist. But I would absolutely love to see Kingdom Come well. So, all right, let's move on to our last story here in the break. But before we go to our little bit of a mini plug break, and that is just real quick talking about the industry support for, as we mentioned here, the Black Lives Matter movement and the protesters. A lot of studios have come out and production companies have come out in support, including Disney, Viacom, CBS, Warner Brothers, A24, Lionsgate, BET, FX Networks, Fox Entertainment, and AMC. But starting out, this whole statements by these studios leading the pack was Netflix, Amazon, Hulu, HBO, and Stars. They all tweeted support for the Black Lives Matter movements and the protests that were happening over the weekend. Netflix tweet and the tail end of last week. Netflix tweeted on Saturday afternoon, "To be silent is to be complicit. Black Lives Matter. We have a platform and we have a duty to our Black members, employees, creators, and talent to speak up." YouTube chimed in on Friday and said, "We stand in solidarity against racism and violence. When members of our community hurt, we all hurt. We're pledging $1 million in support of efforts to address social injustice." Amazon Studios posted on Twitter and Instagram that, quote, "Together we stand with the Black community, colleagues, artists, writers, storytellers, producers, our viewers, and all allies in the fight against racism and injustice." Mm-hmm. Quibi changed its Twitter bio to say, "We stand together against injustice. #BlackLivesMatter." Stars lent its a voice in saying, quote, "We cannot stand silent while our Black communities under the weight of violence, discrimination, and injustice." Color of Change and the NAACP are among the organizations taking lead in the fight for racial justice in America. We support their mission. And we support them in their mission, and you can too. Hulu tweeted, "We support Black lives today and every day. You are seen, you are heard. We are with you." Bob Chapek, the new CEO of Disney, tweeted, "We intend to focus our efforts and resources to compassionately and constructively talk about these matters openly and honestly as we seek." And then Marvel itself tweeted that they, quote, "stand against racism." And then FX tweeted Sunday morning that they stand with our many African-American colleagues, artists, and friends, and we support all who stand for a just legal system, one that does not tolerate senseless violence. And Lionsgate tweeted an incredible statement saying they stand with all people of color in the fight against racial injustice and inequality. The recent killing of George Floyd is the latest in a series of deplorable events that highlight the need for real change in how we address our diversity as a society. Our company has a proud 20-year history of serving our audiences with films and television programming that celebrate this diversity and speak to a wide range of cultural experiences. On behalf of our entire organization and all of our businesses, we are committed to a society that is diverse, inclusive, tolerant, and respectful. And that's pretty much the tone that all of these statements took, Alex. How encouraging is this for you to see that? And were you surprised by studios coming out? Because most studios try to stay out of things that they deem might be too political. Although I think this is a more human issue than it is a political issue, but you don't usually see studios chiming in on things like this. Was this a surprise to you?
It was a surprise because, like you said, usually not only do they like to stay out of these situations, but you know, I don't like to say middle America, because as someone that lives in St. Louis, someone that lives, you know, in middle America, you know, there's people on both sides, you know, in my neck of the woods, you know, and as a result, you know, I mean, just like in this, in some other areas of the U.S., there's more than others and vice versa. But it's really, to me, it's very encouraging to see that, you know, they are saying, hey, we have a platform. We have, they said, and I quote, I think it was Netflix that posted on Twitter, is to not only be silent, just complicit, Black Lives Matter. We have a platform and have a duty to our Black members, our employees, creators, and talent to speak up. To me, that, you know, that's really wonderfully, not only beautifully worded, but also they're 100% correct. I think it also helps that, considering that not only is, I feel like I have not met a single person that is saying that, yeah, this person is completely wrong.
Right.
You know, it's a very gray area. So I feel like a lot of people are on the side saying, hey, regardless of how you feel about, you know, the looting, for example, or the rioting, I actually live only a few miles away from Ferguson, actually, Ben. Yeah. Let me just let you know. Literally a few miles away. But at the same time, it does feel very uniform when I say at the same time that everyone agrees that we need to be equal.
Yeah.
That Black Lives Matter, that people need to have these injustices are really fucking suck.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know how else to say it.
So I think you should say it as you feel. Yeah.
It's rough.
Yeah.
So I am glad, you know, people are actually finally staying up, you know, but also what are some of these people are going to, like, what are they, some people are going to do, like, boycott these companies? Are you going to boycott YouTube and Disney and Netflix? No, that's not going to happen. So I am very glad that they are really staying firm to, you know, what they're saying. And they're like, hey, this is a very difficult situation. I can't imagine how it must feel for, if you're a person of color, but especially of the Black community, how this must be feel for you. So if you need to take that time away with everything going on, do what you need to do. So
yeah,
I'm thankful for that.
Yeah, I agree with you, Alex. I am thankful for that as well. And I champion them making these statements. But I got to kind of chime in here a little bit. I absolutely love that they've said all the things that they said. But let's look at the history of some of these companies. Not necessarily really good at doing some, not all, some of these companies bringing out diverse content, content from creators who are Black and Latino and Asian, and whatever, color of the spectrum you want to touch on. They're not some of these companies aren't the best at doing that. I mean, you look at Pixar, Rashida Jones doing Toy Story 4, she left because she felt like they weren't really caring about diverse representation in their content. And that's a strong statement to make against something like Pixar. And you can make it because most of the time, if not all the time, Pixar's leads are usually white leads, or a majority of the cast is white voices. So, I mean, that's the thing that you have to kind of put on the table. So I'm cool that you make all these statements. I think it's great that you make all those statements. But you're a studio that has a terrible track record of hiring minorities and promoting minorities and doing content for minorities in the country or in the world, then I think your statement rings hollow. Because if it's not backed by action by your own executives and your creatives, then I think you're just doing something like this to look good in the PR sense. And I'm not behind that. You know, we have progressed past just statements, and people want action. I think a majority of the reason why people are protesting is because we're tired of thoughts and prayers. We want action. And action doesn't just mean political action or legal action or representative action in Congress or in our presidency. It also means action in our art and action in our communities, action in our content, action in our media. That matters. You know, I have to bite my tongue about a certain situation. I can't speak about it. I really, really want to speak about it. But let's just say, if you remove minorities from your staff and then staff it with a majority white staff, you're actually not representing what's going on in the world. Just letting you know. And if you're schooling other studios about their diversity while your staff is not diverse itself, you're an actual hypocrite and a disgrace. And so I can't speak about it personally. Like, I can't say what I want to say, but I'm just saying, putting it out there. And I think that's the frustrating part of it all. Don't speak diversity, practice diversity. Or if in a utopian world, speak and practice diversity. That's what you like to see. And some of these studios who did chime in, they do. And some of these studios don't. So hopefully this is the wake-up call across the board for a lot of people.
I feel like that definitely opens up the conversation to even wider, to a bigger conversation, actually. That's what it leads to. Because, you know, obviously, if you're going into the arts, into Hollywood in particular, let's face it. I mean, to work in Hollywood and, you know, just be involved as a very, work as a creative is very, very difficult. And so statistically speaking, so it is much easier for someone from a family or friends or whatever it may be that is able to provide that kind of financial support, making it that much easier. Therefore, it can be a lot more likely for, like I said, people that have that kind of not only outside support, but, to have those options. So therefore it makes it that much easier for them to get a lot of specific jobs. I absolutely agree. A lot of these companies, it can ring absolutely hollow, but also at the same time, if a company has a history of doing really awful things, absolutely agree. Disney, for example, is no stranger to, having a lot of issues. I mean, do we need to talk about Song of the South? Do we need to talk about Peter Pan? Sure. Do we need to talk about all that stuff? But at the same time, people change, companies change, and authority figures change as well. So I am hoping, this is definitely going to be the step in the right direction where they are going to start implementing some more changes.
And this isn't just to the movies. Also, look at the comic books. How many white characters do we have in the comics? That's got to change as well. And I don't truck. I know a lot of people truck, but I don't truck with a person of color taking over the mantle of another superhero. I want to see them do their own things. Now, I love Miles Morales. I love Into the Spider-Verse, but something like Blue Beetle, I'm like, okay, that's cool, but why can't we have Black superheroes, Latino superheroes, agents on larger scale, larger numbers in these organizations like Marvel and DC and Image. I want to see more of that. And so hopefully down the road, we will get them, in that mantle. I do, like I said, I want to make sure I'm clear on this. I'm all down with the John Stewart Green Lantern. I'm all down with Miles Morales Spider-Man.
but I want to see our own stuff. And I hopefully we'll get that as this movement keeps going forward and the demand for it increases. Hopefully studios and comic book companies and whoever's creating media listens. It's really important.
Not only that, though, whenever those stories and characters do finally come to fruition, I am hoping that they're actually will sell.
Yeah.
People actually buy those stories and buy those comics and everything. Yeah. And therefore, it will further justify, hey, people are wanting to buy these stories, you know, with these characters, like, you know, Coco, for example, you know, obviously it's not a comic book, but it is an anime story, you know, centered on, I haven't seen it, but I believe, you know, based on, you know, the Latino experience, obviously growing up, and, you know, you don't have to be a Latino in order to appreciate and love that movie. So, you know, so we can be, no matter who you are, what race you are, you can listen to these stories, read these stories, and from like a new perspective, and still love them regardless.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And
buy them, buy art from people of color.
Exactly. Buy the art from, buy media from people of color, because you also will be exposed to more diverse points of views in your own thought, in your own world. You know, I can tell you 9 million stories of white upbringings in this country, but I cannot tell you 9 million stories about black people upbringings in this country through media, or Latino, or any Asian American block. I can't tell you the same number of stories. So we need to have, I don't say we have to have the same amount, because obviously there are more white people in this country than there are minorities when you separate it out by blocks. But I think we need more representation in media for damn sure. And our stories need to be told more. And that's how you're going to bridge the divide, bridge the gap, create a more diverse society where people understand the upbringing. So they have a common knowledge, a common conversation, common vocabulary with which to build foundational change in our country, systemic change in our country. And I think that's at the heart of these protests, is a need for a systemic change and more equality in the treatment all across the board in this world. So, you know, just my two cents. Anyway, all right, let me take that down. Please, if you want to send your Streamlabs or Super Chats, we're still open for them. Alex, what have you got to plug, for God's sakes?
No big deal, but I have this show called Cinema Bias.
true.
It's a real fun time. Video Drew, aka Drew Grant, and I, we really dive into our personal movie biases. Yeah. And, you know, when it comes to certain genres, directors, you know, we kind of dive into why we haven't seen some major movies, or why we kind of focus on some, you know, genres or whatever it may be. And we kind of dive into, you know, our histories with it, you know, our relationship with those movies, and sometimes why we actively avoided Rosemary's Baby, Roka. But also, I'm not one to talk. I haven't seen Coco. So, I mean, like, you know, everyone has, you know, everyone has a lot of those movies, you know, up there. And, you know, our different upbringings, you know, really kind of focus on different types of movies. But we do that every single Tuesday. Cinema Bias, definitely come check it out. And it starts at 10 o'clock Central. So we do it live, and we chat, you know, it's a recommendable, you know, favorite moments, favorite scenes, how is it aged, you know, also like from our you know, sometimes like, for example, we did an episode on Blue Velvet. Drew, that was Drew's pick for the week.
I've never
seen it before, and so going into it, I was like, I never saw a David Lynch movie, so I was like, interesting. It was my first David Lynch movie. But it, she's like, yeah, I used to love this movie. This was one of my favorite movies of all time, and then I re-saw it, and I was like, this movie fucking sucks. She's like, this movie is really bad.
It's a troublesome movie.
Yeah, but sometimes your perspectives changes on certain stories and everything, you know, as you get older, you know, and so you have new experiences. So that's kind of fun to dive into as well.
Yeah.
But that's Schmobates, Schmodown related debating. Roka has argued on it. Bibbs and Billy Belford are coming up on Wednesday. So hang out with us on that.
There you go. Good stuff. I'm sure that's going to be a titanic confrontation between those two gentlemen. So we shall, you all should see, you should definitely enjoy that. And also follow Alex, for God's sakes. I want a goal where we get Alex over 1,000 followers by the end of the week. That's my goal. Get her 1,000 followers on Twitter. If you don't follow Alex, follow Alex. She's a good follow. go and subscribe to her there on Twitter and her Instagram, which I think is a different thing, but you go and find her there on Twitter at least and give her 1,000 likes or follows. You guys, you know the deal here. You please subscribe to the Outlaw Nation channel if you haven't subscribed yet. This is our mid-break, so we got a couple more stories after this, but I'm still plugging here. Please hit that subscribe button you've had. Also, hit that like button. We're only at 125 likes, and there's like 215 of y'all in here watching. What? Please swing that cursor button, hit that like button, get us over 200 likes so that, you know, we're seen by the YouTube algorithm and the things they got going on there. So please do that, hit a like. And if you're listening to us or watching us after we've already done this live, please leave a comment below, leaving as many comments as possible as you guys. If you've been thinking about leaving a comment and you don't leave a comment, because it helps also boost up our visibility on the YouTube platform, the YouTube algorithm as well. So please go and leave a comment if you like what we're talking about, if you've got an issue what we're talking about, or if you don't like what we're talking about. We are open to all of it. Just be respectful. Mm-hmm. That's all we ask. Just be respectful.
I will comment back to you guys as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I will come chat it up with you guys in the comments. I'm not going to lie. I get bored a lot. I'm not working right now. I don't have much to do. So I'll probably just hang out in the comments section and just like,
there you go,
respond to a bazillion of you guys. So
I think someone responded to you on the last show or the show before with a list of movies for you to watch when you asked what movie should I watch.
That. Yeah. I saw that and I was like, I've seen 3/4 of these, but I appreciate it.
I appreciate it.
You
can also follow me at The Roka Says right there below. But don't forget, later on today, we are doing a fun. How can I say this correctly? We're doing a fun show of Game Time. I know Winston Marshall was on Roxy's stream yesterday. Apparently, incredible work there between all of them on that show. I was very proud. You know, you have great friends in life and you're very proud of them and what they get to do in this world. And, you know, what they did there and the support they got from the fan base and the people like donating the money that they donated for this incredible cause, I think just says volumes about the kind of love they engender in their fandom and why they're able to do the things that they do. But we will be on a little bit later on today at 2 p.m. PT. Unfortunately, Jay Washington can't join us this week because he's flying in from out of town. I don't know if he went to the protest in another part of the country, but he's flying in from out of town, so he's not going to make it. So who do I got? Mark Ellis. That's right. Mark Ellis is joining us, me and Winston Marshall as well, 2 p.m. PT. Now, Mark Ellis is going to come on for the 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. slot. We're from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. right now. Just me and Winston. We might be able to bring on a special guest for the 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. slot. Depends on who I get booked in time. But we will be live at 2 p.m. with an episode, a special episode of Game Time. And you know we're going to be talking about the NFL statement about these protests and our feelings about that. So don't forget to join us there. And of course, there's a whole bunch of other content here on the Outlaw Nation channel. Geek Buddies is up. The new Strong Style we put up this past Friday. Fun live conversation between Aaron Turner and I talking about all kinds of things going on in the world of professional wrestling. And we revisited Ricky Steamboat versus Ric Flair from Chi-Town Rumble, I think is what it is, from 1989. So a lot of fun there as well. Is there any other? Oh, yeah. And the Outlaw Nation show with Kate Mulligan. If you haven't watched, I don't understand Kate Mulligan. Kate Mulligan's episode is barely above 3,000. That is a crime and a half. Get it to 5,000, people. You got to watch this thing. Kate Mulligan is incredible on the show. I may start cutting out little things to put up on Twitter so that people can watch it, because she is fantastic on that show. And Calvin almost steals the entire night, for God's sakes, on that show. So there we go.
Calvin's a star.
What's that?
Calvin is a star. Calvin is a star. But also, it sounds between you, Ellis, and Winston, it really sounds like it's going to be a very, very boring time.
So yeah, that's
no one just, should go and watch. I'm sorry, I can't say that with a straight face. Because it does sound like a pretty fantastic time. I think all you guys are pretty dang awesome. Winston, he is a gem. I love Winston. He is the beast of the flipping knees. And Ellis, I mean.
Yeah. He's a good guy. Coming in with a small perspective. I love Ellis. But there you go. That's the stuff coming on at 2 p.m. PT. We're going to go to the top of the hour. Hope Alex can stick around till 10 a.m. because there is no SCN Live, and we got a couple more topics to talk about. So, Alex, if you're good, can you stick till 10 or do you have to go at 9:45?
No, I'm good. You like for a second, I was like trying to like figure out the time changes because it's like almost noon here. So I was like, wait, 10:45. Wait.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And I was like, wait, which went so yeah, so had me confused for a hot second, but yeah, it's totally fine.
Right on. All right, well, why don't you present our next one here, the Ryan Gosling story people have been waiting to talk about.
Okay. Yo, Ryan Gosling. Hey, girl. Hey, girl. You know what the material's made of? Wolf fur. That's all I got to say. Okay, so Ryan Gosling, he's recently been cast in some Wolfman movie. We don't know any specifics about it, but it is, you know, obviously the Universal Monster. Cannot wait. It's going to be a really great time. No director is attached. However, we do have two script writers that are actually very notable from the Orange is the New Black series that have worked together and collaborated on several episodes. Lauren Shunky Bloom, I can't pronounce it, and Rebecca Angelo. So they're going to be pretty fantastic. But, you know, there's this idea that there possibly could be connected to Elizabeth Banks's The Invisible Woman, Karen Kusama's Dracula, you know, but this movie is going to be put together. It's being described as Anchorman that gets infected with Anchorman that's been infected and also has a script that has been described as having a vibe that evokes Network and Nightcrawler. Yeah. 1976's Network, as well as you know, Nightcrawler from 2014. So it sounds like we're almost going to get a monster movie with that's almost like a black comedy per se, and you know that's going to be very quippy, very funny at the same time. Yeah. Because regardless of how you feel about the show, Orange is the New Black, that show is funny AF. So it's very funny indeed. And also, I do think it's very encouraging to see someone like Ryan Gosling really flexing his comedic muscles. He is low key. Fantastic and you know, in comedy, you know, anything comedic, you know, the Nice Guys, for example, a lot of them associated him with like rom-coms and, you know, dramas and things like that, but he is fantastic in a lot of dark comedies. Also, he is a complete gem on anything he's involved with SNL. He is just the alien scene.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I like pee myself laughing every single time. It's fantastic. But yeah, this is really exciting to see, you know, obviously. And he's also an actor that loves to make fun of himself and the idea of that the public has of him. So I'm really excited to see how this is going to really fall out. What are you thinking, Roke, about this casting?
Yeah, it's interesting. I like the idea of Gosling as Wolfman because it'll be like, hey, I'm a wolf. Who's a man? What's up? Is that a full moon? Hey, I'll be right back. You stay here. I'll be right back. You know, oh, do I have a little blood in my mouth? Sorry about that. What do you like jazz? Do you like jazz, girl? It'd be something like that. You know what I'm saying? But I like the idea that Ryan Gosling, this is interesting that they're saying that he's an anchor man who gets infected. I immediately thought of Steve Carell and Anchorman when he has to go like, blah, 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 blah. You know, I was thinking he might get infected like that, but they're saying it combines Network and Nightcrawler. And Nightcrawler is one of these fantastic, criminally underseen films with Jake Gyllenhaal. Yeah. It shows you the seedy underbelly of determination and drive to succeed in a pretty, ugly part of our world.
In general.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. I mean, yeah. True. But I like the combo.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because Network is a statement about our culture, about our media, about our society. So if this is going to operate on a whole nother level, then I'm all for it. And because it also evokes what was done with Invisible Man with Elizabeth Moss in Lee Winnell's hands as the director. You know, totally speaking about being in a controlling relationship and how a man can stalk and torture a woman.
It's not a controlling relationship. It was a completely abusive relationship.
Sure. Abusive relationship.
There's no candy coating it. It wasn't just a casual controlling relationship where they're both like, oh, that's so cute. You told me to stay home today. No, it was straight up an abusive, physically, emotionally, and sexually abusive relationship they were in. But so it sounds like they are taking a lot of these, where these movies are taking on a lot of you know, they're almost like they are completely social thrillers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I'm kind of really, and obviously, you know, the network and Nightcrawler also have these, a lot of horror elements, as well as a lot of these like kind of political themes and ideas as well.
Yeah.
And also, I mean, let's be honest, a lot of horror movies have, you know, some kind of political theme that we don't really think about. I mean, Godzilla is actually about World War II, the after effects of World War II in Japan.
Yeah, so, right, exactly.
You know, so you can't really say horror, like, movies can't be political when they are absolutely political.
Yep,
totally agree. But, you know, I am really excited to see this potential, like, social thriller, social horror film, you know, with these people attached. Now, I know, like you said, I mentioned that there's no director or anything attached. Is there any director that kind of this kind of idea kind of shouts out to you?
Wow, that's a great question. I didn't even think about a director.
Well, while you're thinking, while you're kind of thinking away, I also just jumping on Nightcrawler, I would love to see Dan Gilroy. He also did Velvet Buzzsaw as well. You know, I would love to see that. He's also really great with, I love the way he focuses on not only the dark comedy aspects, but also at the same time, it's weird. He makes really attractive people creepy. And, you know, Ryan Gosling is casually attractive person, you know, whatever.
Casually attractive? I'm sorry, what? If he's casually attractive, I'm screwed.
I'm a married woman, Roke. I don't know what you're talking about. I would never.
Look, just because it's on the menu doesn't mean you have to order it. I'm just saying. I'm
casually attractive. Casually attractive. But also, I think another really great option would be to consider is Morten Tidlum. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right, but he did Headhunters. He did recently. He did a bunch of the really great episodes from Defending Jacob. That's really popular right now. I think it's an HBO show. But you know, he's fantastic, especially with a lot of really gritty action with a little twist on a fantasy element, which I think is you know, this idea of inner conflict of, you know, not understanding the full situation and you know, running from yourself, running from the idea of yourself, your own transformation and the idea of self-acceptance. So I feel like he would be someone to, you know, people should consider. So any studio execs,
That's possible. I like the idea of Alexandra Aja, who did Crawl, and also did High Tension, which I personally is one of my favorite foreign horror films. So I like his bringing him into more of the fold here. And I'm sure he has a relationship with Jason Blum and knows all about what they're doing there at Blumhouse. So being a part of the Universal, you know, under the Universal banner, but under Blumhouse specifically, I think Aja can make it work with a low budget. I mean, that's the thing that when I was on the set visit with Lee Winnell talking about Invisible Man, the one thing he said is they sent him back to Australia to shoot Invisible Man because they can get more bang for their buck down in Australia. So certainly Universal now walking away from the dark universe, big, you know, type movies. They want the smaller approach. So Alexander Aja has done the smaller approach the whole time and made it work and done some incredible horrors and some fun horrors like Crawl. Crawl's a fun horror because you're just like, you can't help but smile or laugh in certain moments because it's so insane what's happening, yet so believable, which you enjoy. So to me, having him do a Wolfman would be very, very interesting. And I see people in the comments. I totally want to respect that. You know, people are like, oh, talk about diversity. And here they are casting a white dude as Wolfman. I get it. Maybe that's not the hill we want to die on. I'll be honest with you. As people of color, it's not, we want to be the Wolfman. You know, I don't think that's the one we need to be doing, to be honest with you. And we had one already in Benicio del Toro. A Latino Wolfman, by the way.
We haven't had one succeed, though.
Yeah, we have. Oh, not since Lon Chaney, that's for sure. Not since the 1930s. Yeah, but
I don't even know if this movie will be a success, let alone, like, I haven't seen a female wolf. I haven't seen a female wolfman or wolf woman,
wolf lady.
But as a female, that is part of this community, I do not want to see a movie that's saying, hey, let's just not change the scripts. Let's not change it and just put a woman in there for just the sake of having a woman. Like, I want it to feel real. I want it to be a natural. And if they're going to be like a real story, you might have to change some things in the scripts. And I don't know, you know, how much they want to change it. So,
yeah. Yeah, we'll see. Mm-hmm. Shout out to BCD who is leaving. Have a good rest of your day, man. Thanks so much. Handle that stuff in the lab. Handle that stuff with the labs, dude. Stephen Foley said, I really like The Invisible Woman, but now how realistic is a series or a full moon on a platform? And this is actually a really good point, right? We were talking about this because it isn't just Wolfman. They've also got what? Karen Kusama's Dracula is in the work here. Dexter Fletcher is doing Renfield, which of course is connected to Dracula. And Paul Feig is apparently attached for the Dark Army. So, which I think, I don't know what the Dark Army, I think it was a zombie or mummy thing. I don't know what Dark Army is, but I think this is a fair point to bring up. How realistic is a series or a full moon on a platform? I don't know. It depends on how they want to go about it. Maybe it's a serum. They said he's infected. So how is he infected? Is he bit by a wolf or is it a serum that is delivered to him? Is he out at a bar and someone like pricks him on the shoulder with something and turns him into an essence of guinea pig and a wolf man or something like that? What's that? A curse?
Is he cursed?
I don't know. Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. It is... I remember I had like one guy that mentioned to me and I was in college, hey, you don't know how much of a curse it is to be a man right now.
Oh,
I remember I was in a sorority back in college and I remember being at a party. It was like, you don't know how it is to be a white man.
Yeah.
That's so cursed in this community. And Jesus. I'm just like, oh, I'm just going to grab my beer and just casually walk away, step back. But there's a lot of different approaches that can take this. And also, I'm sure it would be, I would love to see, Ginger Snaps. True.
Ginger Snaps is good. I'm not going to deny that.
Some Ginger Snaps.
Yeah, Ginger Snaps
good. I forgot about that. But yeah, I would love to, there's a lot of symbolism, obviously, with the idea of the transformation of Wolfman, Wolfwoman, mm-hmm. whatever, you know, they want to do. But also, there's not even a confirmation that we don't have some kind of female wolf figure. So
Right. Or she wolf, what have you.
Yeah.
But I had a thing for Catherine Isabel way back when she was doing the snaps, the Ginger Snaps ones. I mean, the whole reason I watched a lot of them was for her because I thought she was very attractive. So I was like, that'll get me into the show. I'm down. I remember those days. John Ashford, you know, if you want to say Gosling's attractive and get you into Wolfman, I think I'm allowed to say Catherine Isabel was attractive and got me into the She-Wolf story. John Ashford said, morning, John and Alex. Hope you're well. Do you think Gosling's Wolfman will be rated R? What do you think, Alex?
I would love for it to be rated R. If you are going in the route of like Nightcrawler, these really dark, dramatic
roles,
I would love for that to happen just because it kind of opens the door. But I know financially speaking, it is more risky theory.
Yeah, sure.
I doubt it'll happen. Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. But a girl can dream.
Yeah. I'm looking up what I think Invisible Woman was R, so I wouldn't be surprised, or Invisible Man, sorry. I wouldn't be surprised if a Wolf Man was rated R, to be honest with you, because they don't make it they're not making it for that much money. Yeah, it was definitely rated R. So, and it was a 2-hour rated R horror film and made a decent amount of cash and did well on video on demand. So I hope it's rated R.
It wasn't really, the marketing though didn't make it out to be a horror movie though. If that
for Invisible Man.
Yes. When I saw the marketing, to me it looked more like a thriller, psychological thriller, or a drama.
Yeah.
Rather than maybe that's just my point of view as a female. I didn't go into that thinking horror, traditional horror movie. Like I'm not going to compare that to like Paranormal Activity or anything. Obviously.
Yeah.
Right. Also the idea of the like labeling a movie, especially a social thriller, is a very, very recent thing. We have talked about how movies and horror movies especially can be very political,
have
political themes and everything. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, a lot of studios and executives and everything, they're very it can be very risky to label a movie as political, obviously, especially if it's not something directly dealing in politics or anything like, or the military or anything like that.
Right.
So I know a lot of movies are kind of, they don't really want to take that route. So saying something like horror instead of social thriller with horror elements is a lot prettier on the
I agree. John Doe sent in a stream live. He said, so is Jason Blum going to produce Wolfman? Because that's the only way I'm excited to see it. And Nightcrawler not nominated at the Oscars was bullshit. All right. So yeah, I think Blum is going. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he has to produce this thing, I feel like, because this is all kind of under his approach that Universal is doing in conjunction with Blumhouse, their approach to their version of the Dark Universe. And his wife is writing the script, Lauren Shuker Bloom, along with the Rebecca Angela. They both wrote on Orange is the New Black. So they are involved in this as well. So I would be very, very surprised if he isn't producing this thing. So there you go. So we'll see what comes out of it. But certainly there's a long way to go before we see it. And he's just circling it right now. He has an official. He's just circling it right now. So we'll see. All right, let's move on to our last story here before we wrap up. We got about 10 minutes left in the show. And that's Ezra Bridger. That's right. Ezra Bridger, for those of you who are Star Wars Rebels fans, you know exactly who I'm talking about. Ezra Bridger, there is supposedly, and this is coming from MovieWeb and the Illuminati. So I don't know how reliable it is necessarily, but I want to give it a little bit of a conversation here. Apparently Lucasfilm, this is a rumor right now, is reportedly casting an actor to portray a live action Ezra Bridger in a new Disney Plus live action Star Wars series. Ezra Bridger was rumored to be in The Last Jedi or The Rise of Skywalker. They even mentioned the possibility he was going to show up in season one of The Mandalorian, but he didn't show up in either of these characters as a live action situation. A lot of people thought that Max von Sydow's character was supposedly Ezra Bridger way in the future, but we didn't see that necessarily. But that is what they're right now, according to them, the MovieWeb and the Illuminati, Disney Plus live action series will feature Ezra Bridger. It's a mystery right now if it's going to happen and what it will be involved, but it's believed that the studio is looking for a male, quote, between the ages of 30 to 40. And speaking of diversity, they're looking for an actor of color, specifically performers of Asian descent. However, they are open to Indian, Latino, or Middle Eastern actors as well. The casting is supposed to have taken place earlier this year, but it looks like the COVID delays and stoppages pushed it back a little bit. They're not sure if this is the Disney Plus series that Leslie Headland was announced to be doing, but it certainly seems to be lining up. But that series is also supposed to be female centric. Like, females are kind of the leads of this show. So it could be Ahsoka Tano, it could be Sabine, and it could be the continuing story of this with Ezra Bridger, because that's where we left Star Wars Rebels, them going after Ezra Bridger. So this could be the series. What are your thoughts on this, Alex?
I have not read the books or anything. I don't know anything about
or the seen story. The series. Yeah,
I haven't, so I feel really, really bad. But you know, everything involved. I mean, I really love the idea. Obviously, more people of color getting into a Star Wars movie.
Yeah.
I feel like it's kind of funny. I feel like they're trying to make up for a lost time by adding a lot of, you know, purposefully making a lot of characters in the Star Wars world of color. Yep. Because how long did it take until we had a person of color outside of Lando? Obviously, too dang long. That's how long. But I'm really excited about the idea of having this character in particular. I did a little bit of research on his character. You know, I know he was like a pickpocketer or some kind of con man kid. Essentially, he
small
was
an orphan.
He was also born on the same day that Palpatine was put in, not office, but put in that role, I guess.
Yep.
He ends up being taken under the wing of Jedi Padawan Kanan Jarrus. I'm sorry, I am like butchering a lot of these names. I apologize. I don't know.
Right. His Jedi master is Kanan Jarrus, and Kanan Jarrus wasn't even a full Jedi, but he trained Ezra Bridger, and Freddie Prinze Jr. voiced Kanan Jarrus on the series. But yeah,
that guy, I know. He's
awesome. Yeah, you do.
I'm just saying, I know that person. he's also, there was kind of mentioned that he's also, you know, considering his upbringing and everything, you know, he definitely feels there's a lot of inner conflict going on. He has some tendency towards the dark side and everything as well. So he's, you know, definitely a lot of those conversations. And there's some ideas that he's at some point he's purposefully misled you know, by, you know, by his mentors per se. But yeah, I, you know, they're going to be, it sounds like, you know, they're going to focus on him as an adult, obviously not as a kid. Right. So I am really excited to see. Is there anyone in particular that, you know, you read this description or you read this character and you're like, I would love to see this person?
I want an unknown. So I don't necessarily see that. I want an unknown. Mina Massoud, I know some people mentioned Mina Massoud, some people mentioned Dev Patel. But those are the kind of the cop-out choices, you know, kind of, oh, that seems easy to go this route. Mm-hmm. I like the voice of Ezra Bridger, because I didn't know that actor before I heard him do the voice of Ezra Bridger. I would like to see someone unknown coming up who's maybe kind of established themselves in some way in other media, or maybe in their country's media, if you're going to go out of the country for this character. I don't know, because he didn't have an accent, so I don't know how you'd get away with that. But if you can get an actor who's got that kind of range and that possibility, then why not? And Star Wars certainly has done that. What did we say with Daisy Ridley? She had done 6 episodes of other TV series, random one-offs in these TV series, before she was handled the main lead in this new trilogy, and she killed it. So to me, I think you can find somebody who's an unknown. That's where I want to go and get him into the situation, because that way you don't come in with preconceived notions mm-hmm. of what this actor can do with this character, right? Because already Ezra Bridger, if you watch Rebels, you'll have a preconceived idea of what Ezra Bridger should be. If you add in a well-known actor, then you've got both preconceived notions slamming into each other. And I don't like that. I like an unknown that you can discover as you discover the portrayal of the character throughout the series. So I'd like an unknown myself personally.
I have Amanda Pitch to you.
Okay.
He is an unknown to us-ish, kind of.
Okay.
He's been in a bunch of movies, such as The Last Samurai, Wolverine, 47 Roman. His name is okay. Hiroyuki Sanada.
Okay.
And
I like Hiroyuki Sanada. Is he? Yes. Because he was in Endgame as well. Ronan fights him. But
I would love.
He's a little long in the tooth. Where are we going?
Oh my gosh! I could. He's not. You don't look at him and think, "Yeah, what an old man." Well, no, are you kidding me? He looks like he could. Sure, he would be like he would be a little more advanced, but heck yeah.
Okay.
He is an attractive man, so I can definitely see that happening. Or, I mean, depending on what direction. Plus, he. I think I could definitely see him. But also, I would love to see, depending on what direction you want to go with,
yeah,
saying Michael Pena, my dude.
Michael Pena? As no.
No, how awesome would that be? I mean,
okay. Oh my God, you're insane.
It would be very tempting to not have a moment that's referring to Ant-Man, but can you imagine?
Yes,
the absolute glee us fans would have. Okay, but also I'm not a huge Star Wars person. Obviously, I think it would just be really, really cool. And you're right, absolutely. Going into a role like this, it is it is kind of nice to go into it with a completely unknown.
Yeah.
However, a lot of the actors that are being cast in The Mandalorian aren't really unknowns. They are known to they are definitely involved in the world of Hollywood. They have a bunch of movies under their belts. I don't know just how unknown we're looking.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I stand by it. I think
Hiroyuki Sanada is
the best choice ever. And it's a superior answer to your answer. Any answer you give, Roka.
Fair.
I make the best casting decision ever. I'm pretty much a casting director already. Give me all the money.
Boom, there you go. I like Sanada as an actor. I mean, obviously, I loved him in Last Samurai. By the way, that should be out in 4K. Don't be giving me Cocktail in 4K. And you can't give me Last Samurai in 4K, for God's sakes. Give me that in 4K. But Sanada is 60 years old, Alex, so it depends.
He doesn't look a day over 45. Have you seen his skin? Sure. There's not a pore on him.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
His skin is like baby soft. He is a spokesman for skincare in Korea, like in Japan. Are you kidding me?
Butter. All right. So we'll see what happens.
He would do so good.
Okay. All right. And we'll see if it's even true, to be honest with you. I don't see a lot of people picking up this story, but I thought it'd be a fun thing to throw in to consider the possibility of Ezra Bridger. I respect the Sonata choice. It depends on where they are in the timeline. Could totally work. Rosario, I think Rosario's in her, late 30s, early 40s. Okay. So I don't know. That could work.
What's her name? Hey, I can't remember her name, but she was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Chloe Bennett?
She was in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. She was in Mandalorian. She's been in a whole.
Okay.
I feel really bad. I can't remember her name. Okay. I feel like grandma is like spiritually hitting me in the face.
Okay.
She was in Mandalorian as like one of the pretty much assassins, you know.
Oh, Ming-Na Wen. You're talking about Ming-Na Wen.
How old is she? She's in her 50s.
That's true. Very
she's
true.
She's in her mid late 50s. Does she, fair. Would you say, she totally couldn't be cast as a 35, 40 year old woman? Are you kidding me? Yeah.
40. I'll give you 40.
Regardless, she is stunning.
She is stunning. She's gorgeous. Okay, I remember her on ER. That's how far back I go with her.
Oh my gosh. She's on ER. I don't want to talk about ER.
Okay.
Oh my gosh. Let's not. But the point is, but also it's a running joke that, Asians age very slow.
It's true.
If you're 100 years old, you look like you're 50.
Wow. Okay.
That's
fair point.
The way it is.
Okay. All right. There we go. Okay. I think it's a good place to answer the show.
All right. At least based on my personal experience.
Yes.
Especially, but also it's more Thai, Southeast Asian, but obviously different everywhere.
Yeah. But Alex is 45 years old. So look at it. Not a pore on her, not a wrinkle on her. So look at that.
I am an esthetician. So, this is my job, literally.
Oh, good. Well, if I ever visit St. Louis, I'll go under the thing. I'll go under the needle or whatever it is. Give me a facelift, maybe. All right. Well, there you go. Thanks, everybody, for watching this episode of Mornings with the Outlaw on this Monday morning. I hope we entertained you. I hope we took your mind off what's going on in the world. We did address what's going on in the middle of the episode. So I hope you enjoyed that as well. Felt that we addressed it responsibly. Just because stuff is going on, it doesn't mean you can't also talk about other things that are going on as well. A balance is always good in life. So I hope we addressed it and also took your mind off it a little bit with some of our conversations about all the stuff's going on in the entertainment world right now. Thank you for all your Streamlabs and your super chats. You can always send in Streamlabs. When you see the address pop there, see it above Alex's head over there. You can always send in your Streamlabs and we'll answer them on Wednesday. So you can always send them in and we'll definitely get to them on the show. So you don't have to only send them in during the show. So thank you all so much for doing that today and taking the time to join us. And please hit that like button as we're wrapping up here and giving our plugs. Would love to get above the 200 like situation. I think we're close, but not quite there. So please, if you haven't hit the thumbs up button on this video, please do so now. And if you're watching us after we've already done it live, please hit the thumbs up button on it as well. Give us as many likes as possible and leave as many comments as possible underneath this thing. Helps us with the YouTube algorithm, helps us with the visibility of the Outlaw Nation channel on YouTube. Alex, please plug away what you need to plug.
It's also important to hit that thumbs up because it doesn't make you look like a weenie. Just saying. And okay,
there you go.
Just saying. That's just the way, you don't want your algorithm to say that you look like a weenie, right?
That's good.
Just saying. But definitely
my life mantra.
Exactly. Don't definitely give me a follow up on Twitter right down hither. That'd be really cool. I like to post pictures of food and my family and I and my cats, my very vocal, ridiculous cats.
Yeah.
So, that's the way it goes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, there you go. You can follow me at The Roca Says on Twitter and on Instagram. And shout out to the three people that subscribe to the Outlaw Nation channel during the show. Steven Rivas, JS Reviews. Wait, JSR News Review. Wait a minute. That's my moniker, I think. And Isaiah Stevens, all of you for joining up or subscribing to the Outlaw Nation channel. Thank you so, so much. And don't forget 2 p.m. PT, me and Winston Marshall are talking sports. And then at 3 o'clock, Mark Ellis will join us for the last hour of the show, talk some more about everything that's going on in the world of sports. And, of course, those comments and the reactions to the protests over the weekend. You can't talk about sports and not
talk about that as well, with everything as a reaction to what Colin Kaepernick did for the NFL. So a lot of it's going to be talked about on Game Time. So don't miss this 2 p.m. PT live. Outlaw Nation is on Twitch, all one word. I'll definitely be on Twitch this week. I'll be doing more Facebook live stuff as well. So please go and get involved with the Facebook group, the Outlaw Nation Facebook group. Go and subscribe if you haven't done that yet. I'll be doing more stuff with them as well. And I think that's everything. Don't forget the Outlaw Nation Podcast Network as well. If you haven't subscribed to that, please subscribe to that. Every show we do, except for Geek Buddies, is on there in audio format for you to re-listen to in case you don't want to watch it again, or to listen to in case you don't want to watch us on YouTube. You can do it that way as well. All right, that's it for me. Have yourselves a great rest of your day. Please take care of yourselves. Please be safe. Please don't put yourself in bad situations or anything that's going on in the world right now. Absolutely, if you want to go protest, go protest, but don't get involved in the rioting or the looting or any of that stuff. Please take care of yourself. We want you to be stick safe around and be with us in the Outlaw Nation and enjoy what we got going forward. So we'll be back Wednesday at 8:15 a.m. PT, and there is no SEN Live, so give some love to Christian and Brett. Tell them that you miss them today, but also tell them how much you respect the decision to not do a show today. Got to understand that for sure. All right, everyone, thanks so much. Have a great rest of your day. Take care of yourselves, and we'll talk to you next time on another episode.
Don't be a weenie.
There you go. Hashtag don't be a weenie on Mornings with the Outlaw. Bye.
That's the real thing.